Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit Zurich.ie to find out more.
Orla, thank you very much for that. Now, protests are continuing in various parts of the country outside accommodation, which has been earmarked to house international protection applicants. And we've been covering the protests outside the Racket Hall Hotel in Roscrane, County Tipperary, with people objecting to its selection as a location to house 160 IPAs. Along with legitimate debate, there have been many mistruths peddled online about the asylum seeker process and the refugee statistics. So, in an attempt to separate fact from fiction this evening, we're joined now by Dr. Ciara Smith, who's lecturer in the School of Law at the University of Galway and Programme Director of the LLM in International Migration and Refugee Law at the Irish Centre for Human Rights. And you're very welcome, Ciara, to the programme this evening. You have been covering or working in the area of asylum for over 25 years as an academic. So this is definitely your area. This is something you know an awful lot about. So many of us are coming to it, I think, you know, pretty new, pretty fresh, or people taking an interest in it who might not have done so before this. So we're just trying to really get a sense of, you know, where the truth lies in some of the stuff that people are talking about. We might start with the numbers and this, you know, sense that we're being overwhelmed by the number of international protection applicants. Can you give us a sense of are we, you know, what sort of numbers are coming in?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, the numbers have increased significantly in the past 2 years. Now, I need to distinguish, I suppose, between international protection seekers and Ukrainian refugees. So I'll just leave Ukrainian refugees for the moment because they're actually dealt with in a separate system. So in terms of the numbers of international protection applicants, over the past 2 years, we've had about 13,000 annually. Which is a big jump in numbers, because before that, in the decade before that, we had in and around 2,000-4,000 per year. So there certainly has been a big increase in numbers, but it's coming from a very, very low base. So I suppose it's important to recognise that even though we have had this increase in numbers, it still places Ireland quite low down as an asylum receiving country compared to other EU member states. So, for example, we receive about less than 2% of the applicants that come into the EU compared to countries like Germany, France, Spain and Austria. They take almost 75% of asylum applicants in the EU. So, yes, our numbers have increased, but they've increased from an incredibly small base.
And where are those international protection applicants arriving coming from?
The profiles change a little bit from year to year, but we're tending to see people coming from the likes of Nigeria, Afghanistan, Algeria, Somalia and Georgia would be the top five in the last year, at least.
And what do you think when you hear people saying, Ciara, that people are coming from safe countries?
Well, I mean, you can't categorise the likes of Afghanistan or Somalia as safe countries. Afghanistan, everyone will know why immediately. And Somalia is a completely failed state that is more or less run by a terrorist organisation, Al-Shabaab. So it would be the complete antithesis of a safe country, in fact. Nigeria also isn't a safe country. I mean, we're quite familiar with Nigerian asylum seekers here because we've had Nigerians for many, many years. But the situation in Nigeria, the political situation is also quite precarious. And in the northeast of Nigeria, the government isn't in control of its territory. So I wouldn't regard Nigeria as a safe country either.
And Georgia?
Georgia, I mean, look, there's mixed flows coming from Georgia. And I know that Georgia has been placed on a safe country list, which means that applicants coming from Georgia are processed in a more expedited way when they claim asylum here. So a good, fair and efficient asylum procedure should be able to quickly identify applications that are manifestly well-founded from applications that aren't.
Okay, so that's interesting. So we'll say if people are coming from Georgia, you're saying that has been classified officially as a safe country, but there could be situations in individual cases where people might have a real case for asylum because of whatever their individual circumstances are, and they get to plead that case. And if it works well, then if their case can be proven, then they're allowed to stay, and if not, they're sent home.
Yeah, I mean, we can make generalizations about countries, whether they're generally safe or generally unsafe. But of course, there can be individual victims of persecution and human rights abuses. So it's not possible to say definitively whether people coming from a particular country are valid or not valid. That's an assessment that has to be made in the individual case.
How are international protection applicants getting here then? You know, there's one of the phrases that we're hearing used more and more is open borders.
Well, there are no open borders. I mean, border control has been in the world for the last 100 years, so there's certainly no open borders. And in fact, the lack of kind of safe and regular entry routes for asylum seekers is a huge problem. As we saw with the trafficked people last week in Wexford, and as we see across the Channel and in the Mediterranean, people dying almost every day, which just goes to show that it's actually extremely difficult and perilous for people to get in. And often there's this kind of myth that, you know, oh, asylum seekers should come in through regular channels, or they should come in using legal means. But there are no legal means to come in if you're an asylum seeker, because if you come from an asylum producing country, that country will automatically be placed on a visa blacklist, and you won't get a visa if you come from that, if you come from a country like that. So it's not going to be possible for you to travel in the normal ways. You can't get on a flight and come in the way that you or I would if we were going to another country. So because of that, people have to take these kind of desperate measures, and they have to come in, you know, on unseaworthy boats or in the back of containers and lorries and so forth. So it's just not true to say that there are open borders, but it's also not true to say that people should line up and come in some kind of regular manner, because there is no regular manner.
Okay, so a couple of things on that then. In relation to the checks that are done, as you say, the documents are checked, so people are actually taking means to try and avoid those documents being checked by coming on boats or whatever it might be in an irregular manner. And we've been told by the Taoiseach recently that there are, you know, very stringent tests at our ports and at our airports. But we've also been given information recently that in 2023, almost 3/4 of asylum applications were actually made at the International Protection Office, not at our airports or ports. And some people are taking that information and saying, well, this just shows people aren't coming through the airports or the ports. They're coming in through other means. Some people pointing to the border with Northern Ireland, wondering, are people coming in via the UK?
Well, I haven't actually heard that point about coming over the border, so I can't really comment on that. I mean, there's many ways people come in, and also just to say that people can come in for really ordinary reasons, like family reunification or on a student visa or a work permit or so on, and then the situation in their country of origin can change, and it's no longer safe for them to go back. So, for example, Palestinians from Gaza who may have been in Ireland visiting family members are in a position now where they can't go back at the moment. So you can have people already in the country who claim asylum, or people who may not even realise they're entitled to asylum. And so a gap can elapse between the time that they arrive in the country and when they actually make an asylum claim.
Okay. What then about identity documents? And again, another word that we're hearing thrown around an awful lot is undocumented migrants. Now, we did get figures from primetime reporter Paul Murphy last week. He had got figures from the Department of Justice, which found that almost 70% of people who applied for international protection at Dublin Airport in 2023 arrived without correct identity documents. How does that happen? How do you get on an airplane if you don't have correct identity documents? Or is it that people are getting on, and again, this is what is being claimed increasingly, people are getting on airplanes with their identity documents and losing them or tearing them up or destroying them on the plane. What do you know about all of this?
Okay. Well, again, I would go back to the point that there isn't such thing as a humanitarian visa where people can apply to come in to seek international protection. And again, I would reiterate the point about the visas. So you'll be on a visa blacklist if you come from an asylum producing country. So it almost creates a fait accompli where people have to get false, fraudulent identity documents in order to exit their own country and come into another country. So the system is set up in such a way that there's no regular routes in. So it's no surprise to me to hear that a lot of people do come in with false documents. Exactly how they're doing that, I don't know. But of course, there's a network of smugglers and traffickers out there that are helping him, and that are helping them and benefiting from this lack of a more transparent system whereby people could enter regularly.
Okay, so that's interesting. So undocumented really is, in a lot of instances, correct, because people can't get in a documented way, in a board, we'll say, if you want to put it like that. There's no safe or legal routes for a lot of people who want to come in this situation to come in.
Am I, and it's a little bit... Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit frustrating to hear, and I know that Taoiseach mentioned it yesterday, to hear people say, you know, we're welcoming of migrants, providing they come in regularly. And that kind of gives this idea that there's some kind of regular route out there that you just need to, a queue that you need to join. But that's absolutely not the case. There is no regular way in if you're an asylum seeker. Because you won't be given the visa.
Okay, so then this sort of speaks to the fear narrative a little bit here, doesn't it? Because then when you hear undocumented, yeah, then you start wondering, well, why are you undocumented? What are you trying to hide? You know, and then it sort of it can spiral from there, and then you get to unvetted. And again, the Taoiseach has tried to deal with this recently when he was writing about this, and he was outlining all the different things, checks that are done when people do enter the country. You might just talk me through some of those.
Yeah, I mean, of course, once people make an application at the International Protection Office, there are checks done and so on. But it's quite a damaging narrative, this idea of, you know, the single unvetted military aged male is one that I heard recently. And it's a real example of what we call crimmigration, which is the kind of deliberate confusing of immigration and criminality as if the two had any link whatsoever. So, you know, I would say that single men can also be very, very vulnerable. And I really do regret the fact that they've been sort of targeted within the media and also by certain politicians as being a particularly dangerous group, because there's no evidence of that whatsoever. In fact, there's no indication that the increase in asylum seekers that we've seen has led to an increase in criminality. And I think Drew Harris has said as much. So, in fact, the main form of illegality associated with asylum seekers at the moment is arson attacks and blocking private property and intimidation of asylum seekers, and also threats from the far right. So these are the kinds of criminalities that are associated with asylum rather than anything coming from asylum seekers themselves.
Okay. And what Leo Vraker said in relation to this is that international protection applicants are photographed and fingerprinted on registration. Mm. He said, we check to see if they've already registered in another country. Checks are carried out against EU databases for certain crimes, watch lists and European arrest warrants. But of course, if they're coming outside of the EU, if they do have a criminal record, that wouldn't necessarily be picked up. But your point is, there's nothing to suggest that they would have any more of a criminal record than anybody else, and that you're sort of feeding into this narrative then as the you'd an interesting word there, you used
crimmigration.
Yeah, right,
the crimmigration narrative.
I haven't heard that. Can you talk to me a little bit about the Dublin Convention?
Go ahead. I was just going to make the point, I suppose, about the migrant journey and how hazardous it is. And again, this is going back to the fact that there's no safe kind of path, legal pathways in, like the single men narrative, this idea that they're dangerous. I mean, honestly, in many cases, it couldn't be further from the truth. These are people who have suffered hugely as a result. This is even ignoring the conditions in their country of origin. The fact that they've had to undergo this really hazardous journey from their home country to here, which probably has involved traffickers and smugglers along the way, means that in many cases they're already extremely vulnerable by the time they've arrived here, and they've undergone a lot of human rights violations already. So the very notion that these are a threat is just not the case, in my view.
Can I talk to you finally about the Dublin Convention then? Because again, the Taoiseach has clarified, I think, for a lot of people that it has. There's been an understanding that he said has gone mainstream, which is an incorrect understanding, which is that people who must claim asylum in the first safe country that they arrive in when it comes to the EU, he said that's not how the Dublin Convention works, that it's actually much more complicated than that. Can you explain to us how does the Dublin Convention work, and is it working?
Okay, so the Dublin regulation, it is quite complicated. There's about 8 different grounds for deciding where an asylum seeker should have their claim processed. But the ground that's known the most and that's actually applied the most is the first country of entry ground. So this is, let's say, an asylum seeker enters the EU in Spain and then moves on irregularly and ends up in Ireland. Well, then they will be sent back to Spain to have their claim processed. Now, there are other grounds as well. So family reunification is supposed to be a ground that's used. So here you'd ask, well, despite, you know, let's say someone turns up in Ireland Do they have a family member in another EU member state? Let's imagine they turn out to have a family member in Germany. Well, then they should have their claim processed in Germany. So there are various criteria, but the most used and best known one is certainly the country of first entry. Yeah.
Okay, so that isn't a misunderstanding then. People have been understanding that correctly from what you're saying.
No. Yeah, it is, you know, but this system, just to add, this system is by no means, it's supposed to be a burden sharing mechanism whereby asylum seekers are sort of shared equally amongst EU member states. But of course, it isn't a burden sharing mechanism because the country of first entry means that the countries on the southern periphery of Europe, which would be Greece and Spain and Italy, bear a huge disproportionate burden of asylum seekers compared to countries on the periphery, the northern periphery like us. So this again goes back to putting the Irish numbers in context. We really just receive a drop in the ocean compared to the numbers that are received by some EU member states.
Ciara, listen, it's been really interesting to speak to you and thank you so much for joining us this evening. That's Dr. Ciara Smith, who's a lecturer in the School of Law at University of Galway.